Support for Native American Public Telecommunications comes from the Ford Foundation, on the web at fordfound.org.
Get back, I said. And what bird have you chosen to follow in your final years of solitude? Go ahead, jump holy, all the way to the stomp grounds. We were there when jazz was invented.
This is Ben Kramer, production assistant for NAPT in Lincoln, Nebraska. Thanks for tuning in to the Eros Native Sounds Artist Profile. Joy Harjo, Muskogee, is an award-winning musician, poet, writer, and playwright. A saxophone player, Harjo performs solo, as a duo, and with her group, the Aerodynamics Band. Her performances have taken her around the world. In 2009, she won the Native American Music Award for Best Female Artist of the Year for her album, Winding Through the Milky Way. I spoke with Harjo about her music and many talents. Here's the interview from March 2010. Describe for me what it is that you do.
I'm an innovative poet, performer, writer, musician, playwright, human being.
Could you tell me about your childhood in relation to your musical talents and also your writing talents, if they were influenced by either your parents or family members or just people that you grew up around?
I could hear music in everything, in the wind. You know, that's a kind of music and a rhythm, and the way people, you know, said things, and in the changing of the seasons and all the bird calls, there's always singing and rhythm, and that influenced me a great deal. My mother wrote songs and would often bring country swing. We often had country swing guitar players at our home in Tulsa. I remember I loved her old typewriter that she would have at the kitchen table, and she would write music and record songs until life took over. She wound up with four small children, and our father was gone when I was about eight, so the music went by the wayside, you know, because of the necessity to work and, you know, have an income and to take care of all of us. In fifth grade, I got to play clarinet. I went to junior high, and I wanted to play sax. The band teacher said he wouldn't let girls play saxophone, so I quit because that sounded ridiculous to me. And at that age, I had enough fights already, and I didn't feel like fighting that. I also, at that time, left music behind. I just walked away from all of it. But I always heard music with the poetry, which has its root in certainly voice and singing and speaking. It wasn't until I was almost 40 that I picked up a sax and started learning how to play saxophone, and then I had my first band, Poetic Justice, and now I have Joy Harjo and the Arrow, A-R-R-O-W, Dynamics Band.
And so what was it about the saxophone? Because you mentioned that you wanted to get into it when you were young, but you didn't actually start learning until you were 40. What was it that initially captured your attention and that allowed you to pick it up years down the road and still have that same interest in the instrument?
To me, it's like a human voice. I began to sing again after I started learning sax. The sax taught me to sing again because my voice got buried very, very deeply. With the sax, you can cry, you can laugh, you can go beyond the words, and I guess that's what really got me. It was an instrument that was so much like a human voice, and yet you could go beyond to different octaves of experience.
Did it help that you had a background in clarinet when it came to learning the saxophone?
Obviously, it helped with the fingering, but what I started doing is I went back and started learning to read music. But most of the music I do now, I don't write it out, and I can play by ear.
Are there any other instruments that you are proficient at?
I play saxophone, tenor, and the soprano and alto. Right now, I just have an alto. I'm learning my songs on guitar, so when I travel solo, I can play on guitar. I'm looking at a couple of basses I have here. I have an ukulele, I have a Tahitian ukulele, native flutes, drums, percussion.
Of your talents, which one would you say that you are most known for?
Well, probably the poetry. I've been trying to get the music out there, and now I have an audience that knows the music and doesn't know the poetry, and that's begun to kind of rival the poetry audience. But the poetry is the first thing I was known for, and I have an international reputation with poetry.
She had some horses. She had horses who were bodies of sand. She had horses who were maps drawn of blood. She had horses who were skins of ocean water. She had horses who were the blue air of sky. She had horses who were fur and teeth.
As a poet and a musician and a playwright, how do all those abilities interact with each other, either on the surface? For instance, there's your poem, She Had Some Horses, which you also used for a song. So that could kind of be more on the surface, but also like subconsciously, how do all of those abilities of yours sort of feed off of each other and just work together?
Well, I think the creative force is, you know, one huge field of imagination. They're all linked. You know, I think one thing that links all of them is rhythm. I mean, there's the rhythm of story and event and voice and character in a play. Well, rhythm is really the underlying force of all creation. It's the underlying force of making a human being or a plant or anything else.
And in terms of how you spend your time and energy, like I said, you're a poet, musician, playwright, and you've also been a university professor. How do you find the time and the energy to do everything?
Oh, man, tell me about it. I don't know. I get afraid to write everything down that I have to do because then it will look impossible. Right now, I'm not teaching. I'm considering some 1 or 2 month positions because I haven't taught full time in years. I was doing it part time. You know, I like working with people. That's part of naturally what you do in what I do. You mentor those coming up. I guess I'm blessed with a lot of energy, and so I have to take care of it. And I work out. I need the air for my lungs anyway, for singing and speaking and playing sax. I've been hospitalized with pneumonia more than once and so on, so I think that the saxophone playing and music has really helped. But I always try to keep in good shape, eat right, and stay away from pop and sugar and all that kind of thing, and that helps with the energy. But I also think that there's a force larger than me and that I'm just taking care of it.
Right now, what are you most focused on?
I always do more than one thing at once. I've just always been that way. I've got a memoir due the end of June. I'm focused on that. I've got a new album I'm working on. And right at this moment, I've agreed to do a program for New Mexico Jazz Workshop, their Deconstructing Jazz series. So I'm bringing in a stomp dance group, and we're going to show how we were there when jazz was invented. And I've been traveling and performing. I just got back from playing at the Olympics with Larry Mitchell.
Could you maybe elaborate a little bit about that experience?
Oh, it was great. The Aboriginal Pavilion was quite amazing, and they did a beautiful job. There's a show they projected overhead. It was very well done that showed, you know, the Aboriginal, not all, but a lot of the Aboriginal cultures of Canada on the dome. And it was projected outside so people could see it walking by.
What do you want people to get out of your music when they hear it or when they see you perform?
I guess bottom line to any creative act is the need to communicate. If I had to break my work down or say what it is in essence, it's a celebration of humanness in this very earthly realm and making connections between this and all those levels of spiritual realms. I think that's what any art does, certainly music. Music is one of the most abstract of all the arts. By nature, you know, you're going into even realms beyond the senses.
What does poetry do for you that maybe music can't, or what does it do perhaps like in addition to your music for yourself?
Well, I love the book form because it's small and you can hold it in your hands. Certainly books seem to be kind of going out of fashion. I was reading that the iPad might wind up replacing textbooks altogether. And that seems to be the direction. And of course, the best place to hold poetry is in your heart. And so poetry to me is like singing on paper. It's singing with words.
What are your thoughts on the way that books are going in terms of, like you just mentioned, with the iPad and losing the actual sort of physicality of the poetry by having it all become digital? And what do you feel about that in terms of music and the download or just, you know, the MP3?
Well, yeah, everything has two sides. I've lost a lot of money with the downloads. I remember when I started out with Poetic Justice, I would sell lots of CDs. And I sell CDs when I perform with a band live. You know, people still want that physicality of that performance. You know, the cool thing is that you can hold 1,000 songs in your hand. It's so portable. It's amazing. You can hold music from all over the world. You can listen to music from all over the world. That's pretty exciting. you also lose in that multiplicity. And, you know, obviously you can't listen to everything at once, but you lose the immediacy, you lose the feel of the heartbeat, you know, you lose the atmosphere, you lose place, and you lose context in that way. You can lose the soul of the music, I think.
Can you talk about your experience at the Naja Poetry Slam last year?
Oh, that was fine. You know, it was nice to go over and be part of Naja, and I've always appreciated the work they do. And I've done all kinds of performances. You know, I go out solo and just speak or sing. I've always kind of woven things together that I do. One thing I like to do when I perform, if the venues are open to it, is I often ask for younger up-and-coming poets or musicians to open for me so that they get an opportunity to perform.
And I also saw that you've been to India, and I'm curious how it impacted you both sort of on the personal level, but also as a musician and as a poet.
I've been to a Chennai or Madras in the south. It was the first time I went, and I did a collaboration with a South Indian dancer, Anita Ratnam. And then a year or so ago, the Calcutta Book Fair, and they love my saxophone there. And we did a lot of different performances. The Calcutta Book Fair was canceled. So then they took all of us who had come as part of the U.S. group. We wound up going around and performing in different situations, and they love my sax. So every time we went somewhere, they said, okay, I want you to play sax. We'll do it here, and we want this kind of music. So I learned to get over my fear of just I was just totally improvising whatever came through, wherever. And the highlight for me was that we were taking to a small village outside. We took train up to Shantiniketan, which is where Tagore, the very famous poet, is from. It was quite a cultural center, and I guess it still is a cultural center there. And we were taken out one late afternoon, early evening, to a village of, they call them tribals there, but, you know, the indigenous peoples who still live in indigenous communities. And so they welcomed us. They had a beautiful dance, and they pulled us out to dance. And in response, they, you know, there was a response demanded from our group. So I was pushed out there with my saxophone. I performed while they were dancing. But I love the music from all parts of India, and India is a place in the world that continues to inspire me.
For more information about Joy Harjo and to purchase her music, visit her website at joyharjo.com. That's JOYHARJO.com.
I will not forget the stories which shaped our way of life.
The stories of who we are.
I can tell you about this place we still call home.
And I can tell you about the new stories to come.
When you participate in the 2010 census,
you ensure programs and services to be here for our community.
And you can help continue our stories.
Look for the census form in March.
2010 census, it's in our hands. Visit 2010census.gov, paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.